Does that make you think I'm pathetic all of a sudden?
Oh, no. I think
you're perfectly fine.
Hello and welcome to episode 140 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemroff, and here are my co-hosts, Krista Pechko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
All right, so we've got two reviews for you this week. First, we're going to do a mini review of the new movie, The Edge of 17, and then we're going to roll into a big review of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which will have a little spoiler section on the end, so that'll be a big one. Let's kick it off with Edge of 17 and the queen of the film's poster. We'll introduce that one.
Hi, guys. So, okay, here's the plot synopsis from IMDb. High school life gets even more unbearable for Nadine when her best friend Krista starts dating her older brother. That's an accurate depiction. What they kind of leave out is, like, Nadine is such a loner that, like, when Krista starts dating her brother, she basically has, like, nobody except her snarky teacher played by Woody Harrelson. I love this movie. I saw it when it was playing at TIFF, and I was really surprised because not only is it really funny and does it distinctly capture that sense of teen angst and anger, it uniquely captures female anger, which I feel like is something we don't get to see very much in film because it's considered somehow, like, unappealing or whatever. But Hailee Steinfeld in this, who has been poorly cast again and again, where they're just like, you're the moody teen. Like, here she really gets to sink her teeth into a moody teen role. And she finds such dark humor in it that's really wonderful and such pathos. And taps into a side of being a teen girl that I feel like most movies want to kind of carefully avoid. And they don't praise her for being angry either. And she doesn't get to be, like, clever angry. Like, when Juno's mad at people, she says quippy things. Like, Nadine's kind of a dick. And I love that about Edge of 17 because it doesn't praise her for that. It just allows her to have that moment. And yeah, what Perry was talking about, if you've seen almost any trailer, you'll see parts of my review because, they've been running my Nerdist review left and right in the trailers, which has been really fun for me.
Well, that's a pretty damn cool trailer and poster to have a quote on, because this is now one of my favorite movies of the whole year. And the easiest comparison to make is Juno. And I'm not saying it because the characters are similar, but just because of how they approach, you know, troubles that a young woman of that age would go through. It's so somewhat similar in tone, where it's, you know, very dramatic and heartfelt, but at the same time, there's countless laugh out loud moments where you can have a laugh at their expense. And I just freaking loved this movie. I really couldn't believe how much I wound up loving this movie. Hailee Steinfeld is so damn good in that role. She was just perfectly cast in this, and so was Woody Harrelson. I kind of wish the movie had a little more of him if I had any complaint whatsoever, but I think given what that role was and what he did with the role, it was almost like he made just the right impression for just the right amount of screen time, so that's kind of more me being selfish and just having had so much fun with the character.
Well, such great on-screen chemistry. Like, there's a lot of good work in this movie and a lot of good character work through the acting and all that, but Steinfeld and Harrelson are just spectacular together. My favorite scene is one you get to see in the trailer where he's reading a sext message that she sent someone by accident that she's mortified by, and, like, that scene alone, like, I still thinking about that scene. It's, you know, it's the Mike Hat of this movie for me.
I also wouldn't have wanted Woody Harrelson to have more screen time, because I think the movie did just the right amount of balancing between Nadine being, like, the number one, your protagonist, the person you need to follow through the story, and then surrounding her with worthy supporting characters. Like, the mother is fully developed. I saw where she was coming from. Even seeing Blake Jenner as her brother, because as presented in the trailers, I'm like, oh, he's just going to be, like, the hot guy that pisses his sister off. He's right. Got a really smart, emotional, moving arc as well. And I'm really liking the young actress that plays her friend, Krista, Haley Lou Richardson. I thought she was great in this, and I just saw her in Split also, and I think she's definitely one to keep an eye out for. And then the actor that played Erwin, I have the biggest crush on him. He's the sweetest thing in the world. I was just totally taken by him the entire movie. I thought the courting that was going on between the two of them was just, like, the most charming thing ever.
I watched it with another friend of ours, Michael, and he was laughing at me during those scenes because I watched all the Erwin scenes with my hands, like, covering my eyes like I was watching a horror movie because they are so awkward in, like, a really good way. Like, I really like that performance. I mean, you compared it to Juno, but one movie it made me think of is another one of my favorite recent teen movies, which is The Spectacular Now, and it's just the way that it has, like, such empathy for all the characters. It's a different kind of movie. Like, Edge of 17 is, like, much funnier and, like, all that stuff, but, like, like, it's the same way, like, where the world, not just the main character, but the world around it feels populated with very three-dimensional characters, and there's no, like, sort of glorifying the main characters at all. Like you said, like, you know, there's nothing really special about Nadine. Like, she's a loner, she's unique, but she's not, like, you know, she's not, like, exceptionally smart, she's not, like, exceptionally, like, cool, or, like, it's not that she's, like, jaded because she can, like, see past the bullshit any better than any other teenager, which is one thing I loved about it, because I feel like you see so many movies where, like, you've got, like, a wisecracking teen, and it's, like, because they're so, like, cool and smart, and, like,
it's probably the opposite with Nadine, where she's actually worse at those types of things than anyone.
You get a lot of that from her brother, who's actually the character I ended up identifying the most with. Not because I was like him, like, in school, but the family dynamic was not, you know, not exactly like my family, but, like, there were definitely, like, echoes of that where I was just like, oh my god, that gave me chills. It's like, I remember that so well. And I think that as the movie goes on, like, through characters like him and some of the other ones, you kind of see more and more of, like, because you start off from Nadine's perspective, but as the movie goes on, you see more and more how other people see her, right, and all the horrible and wonderful things about her.
Yeah, and it's astonishing because this is the directorial debut of Kelly Freeman Craig, and it does not feel like a first feature. It's really competent. Yeah. And, props to her. I think this is a really great movie. I'm bummed to see it's not doing super well in theaters right now. Like, it looks like it's only going to make, like, $4.8 million opening weekend. Mm. And I'm guessing that's because it's coming out against another big movie that we're going to talk about in a sec. But, I would say absolutely see Edge of 17. Listen to the trailers, guys. People really know what they're talking about in those.
My hope is that Edge of 17 will be one of those movies that, like, I feel like more... My hope is that more teenagers will discover it as it goes on. Well, all sorts of people, but especially younger people who would really be able to relate to it.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I am looking at the box office numbers now, and it's got a fairly low per theater average. That's not right. Clearly, you should see this movie. Go see it now. All right. Yes, any final thoughts?
Nope. I think we all love this one.
All right. We're moving on to the big one now. The big wide release. The new installment to the Harry Potter film franchise. It's Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Here is the IMDb synopsis. The adventures of writer Newt Scamander in New York's secret community of witches and wizards 70 years before Harry Potter reads his book in school. Okay, fine. That's still a shitty synopsis. He's a magizoologist. I finally learned how to say the damn word, and it wasn't even in the description. Doing the news videos, you gotta actually learn how to pronounce people's names and everything. It's like, not to go completely off track, but we were just talking about Arrival, and it's an ongoing thing that no one can pronounce the director of Arrival's name. So when Eric Heiser, or the writer, came into the studio the other week, the first thing I asked him was, dude, tell me what the director's name of this movie is. And he said, Denis Villeneuve, and I will never say it another way ever again in my life.
I said a name right.
Now that that's taken care of, I loved this movie. I had a lot of fun with it. I want to say 75% of the time. Every single time it veered away from the four main human characters and had something to do with anything other than them tracking down Newt's beasts, it lost me a little, and I actually think Colin Farrell gave a great performance. I thought Ezra Miller did a fine job, too, but the whole thing with the, you know, you have a number of antagonists in this movie. There's the folks at, Makuza, who are trying to, you know, put a stop to what Newt and Tina are doing and reprimand them and all that nonsense. You've got whatever Colin Farrell's up to. You've got Ezra Miller and the second Salemers, who have their whole agenda. The movie does shove the Grindelwald issue in your face very early on in the movie to let you know that that's a problem. And, you know, the movie is called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I think this could have been, like, an A-plus rock-solid introduction to a new iteration of the Harry Potter franchise had it been primarily a movie about Newt Scamander,
right,
teaming up with these new buddies and trying to track down his fantastic beasts.
Which is kind of like how Harry Potter starts, right? Or am I remembering this wrong? Like, I feel like in that one, like, that movie and that book, I felt like gave you more time to kind of get in and get settled, yeah, and get to know the characters and care about them and, like, you know, explore this world before, like, toward the, I mean, they begin with that, like, something bad happened in Harry's past, but that kind of gets recedes in the background while he goes on this adventure, and it's not till the sort of end of that story that, like, the villain starts to become a thing, and, you know, you realize that this is building up to a much greater battle. And I yeah, like, now that you're talking about it this way, I wonder if Fantastic Beasts might have benefited from that, because it is not, it's not streamlined. Like, it's really fun, but yeah, there's just so much going on, like, at every given moment, and that makes this movie, which I did enjoy, I had a good time, but it makes this movie that feel like it is twice as long as it is, because there's just so much going on.
That's interesting. I liked it a lot, and I was actually surprised by how much I liked it, because watching the trailers and stuff leading up to it, I was like, okay, I don't get it. I don't dislike Eddie Redmayne, but, like, he's not someone who initially, like, instantly pulls me into a project necessarily. I mean, we all know I love him in Jupiter Ascending, but, like, the rest of his filmography is spotty for me.
Isn't it really sad that he's got an Oscar, yet we will never mention his name without referencing Jupiter Ascending.
Okay, no, it is not because that is his best performance. Okay, I don't care what the Academy says.
Yeah, the Academy got it wrong.
This is his best performance.
Jupiter Ascending. But I like watching the trailers leading up to this, I was like, look, I like Harry Potter movies. I like the jazz era that it's set in, but it was, like, doing nothing for me. And then when I went to see it, and I went to see it because they did the junket for Nerdist, I was delighted. I just thought it was so fun. Like, when they're chasing the beasts, it's fun, it's imaginative, it's cool looking, and I really love the Muggle character that we're calling nomadges, because God forbid Americans have cool slang in these movies. So the nomadge, Jake Kowalski, is that right?
Jacob Kowalski,
yeah,
played by Dan
Fogler.
Yeah,
he was great.
Love him, by Dan
Fogler. Dan
Fogler
in that role was perfect.
Yeah, I loved everything he did, and it's like, he's such a good, like, palooka character. Like, he's like that, he's that, like, schlub that shows up in old school movies who's like, I don't know what's going on. And I was, like, into all of that. That was wonderful. I thought the main foursome was great together. But where I got frustrated was basically any time they started setting up for a sequel, which happens a lot throughout the film. Like, John Voight shows up at some point, and he's like, these are my two terrible sons.
No
one's
reason.
A newspaper, one's a governor or something. I don't even know what the son did.
That was the one part of the movie where I think you could have legit just erased the whole thing, and it wouldn't have mattered at all.
And that's the whole thing. It just feels very hard, like, they're telegraphing, like, there's gonna be more. It's like, no, we know. But it's like, similarly with the Grindelwald mentions, and I just don't care about that. Like, I wanted to just enjoy time with these things. And even, there's, like, one part, and this isn't a spoiler because it means nothing, but there's one part where, like, someone sees a picture that Newt has, and they're like, oh, you had a girlfriend one time? Let's talk about that for no apparent reason. And, like, that shit just, I didn't need any of that. And it's like, I get it, they're building a franchise, but it's like you said with the first film, Angie, like, let us just start the story. Like, they don't need to do all this stuff of, like, setting up all these things that people don't really care about right now anyway. So I most enjoy this movie when it is just them chasing the beasts and like, you know, whether, and it's like, they also made such fun use of the idea of New York City, though they did not shoot it here. But, like, you know, there's, like, a scene that basically takes place in Macy's. There's a scene that takes place in the subway. There's one that takes place in Central Park. And it was really fun to get to watch, like, jazz age New York City. Oh, and the speakeasy scene is so good. Mm-hmm. To watch jazz age New York City through the lens of Harry Potter, I really enjoyed that. That was super fun. And then, like, also just the costumes by Colleen Atwood, I could watch in motion for hours and hours and hours.
I mean, you know, this is, like, I feel like no one was really sure what to expect from this, because it's, you know, it's a Harry Potter movie.
It's based on a fictional textbook, yeah.
Yeah, so then, like, you know, I did think that it was really fun to actually go in and, like, I don't think I had read Harry Potter before the first two movies, but all the other movies were ones that I, like, went in knowing exactly what the plot was. So it was kind of fun to be like, ooh, like, what is this adventure going to be?
Right.
And, like, one thing that kind of surprised me was, like, I was like, I wonder if it's going to be weird that now the main characters that we're following are fully grown adults instead of children. But I thought it worked really well. One thing I liked about Newt is that he really is kind of, he's not my favorite character. Eddie Redmayne's not my favorite actor. But one thing I did really like about that character is he is genuinely unusual for a franchise hero. Like, he's very introverted. He almost reads like he's on the spectrum. Like, this is not something that we've seen very much. And he doesn't seem to be, like, a chosen one type. It's not actually clear how he fits into the whole, like, Grindelwald thing. But he doesn't, you know, he's not really special, like, you know. So I thought that was another kind of interesting thing where you do feel like you're following the adventures of a guy that just, a fairly ordinary guy that just gets sucked into all of this.
That one conversation between him and Jacob where he says, like, people just think I'm annoying.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm glad you said that out loud, because it makes it even better that you're annoying.
Thing, we're ready. And I know some people didn't like this. I didn't mind it. But he does this thing in the movie where Eddie Redmayne talks with like half of his mouth as if he's sort of chewing on the side of his face a little bit.
I thought that's just what his face looks like.
I know. I think he's mugging. I think he's like, it's a thing. Because I talked to him in the interview and like he wasn't talking like that then. Like he uses his full mouth when he's actually talking. But I thought that
and
was
he
charming.
Opens it very wide when he's in Jupiter Ascending.
Yes, exactly. Like we know he can use his whole mouth. We've seen Jupiter Ascending. We know how that works. He creates life and destroys. I quite liked him in this, but I want to talk about the things that I did not like as much. We have to go into spoilers, so I don't want to railroad us into that. I just wanted to throw that out.
Well, just to briefly talk about another sequence that I really liked. So the place where Newt keeps all of his creatures is in his magical suitcase. That's one of the most incredible sets in this entire movie. I loved just the magic of them opening up the suitcase, walking down there. And that's probably one of the best uses of exposition in the entire movie, where it's like, look at these creatures I caught. I'm going to tell you what they're capable of, because he's busy giving Jacob a tour for the most part. And, right. You know, the audience perspective is Jacob's perspective. So it feels very natural to like have your hand held as you walk through the sure. case. But I think everything that went on down there was just, that felt to me like classic film one Harry Potter type world building. And that's the kind of stuff that I needed. And
yeah.
Holy shit, I want a Niffler, even if it's going to rob me of every shiny penny I have. And I don't remember what his little stick friend's name is, but I thought he was adorable.
Truckle. He has an individual name, but I forget what that is.
Yeah, I like the creatures. Niffler, like, yeah, they had me from Niffler. Niffler's like the first creature you get to meet, and I was like, and I'm in. I love it.
So before we go into spoilers, like, just real quick, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I absolutely think people should see it. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, I'm with you too. It's got, you know, some weak spots clearly, but I think overall it's a lot of fun, and it's a very promising start to what we now know is going to be a 5-film series.
Yeah. I mean,
no, I know what you mean. It's the inevitability. It's like, it's not like, oh, if this does well, we'll make more. It's like, we're doing 5, so get on board. It feels like a threat a little bit.
It does. But I mean, as far as threats go, this one's pretty pleasant. Like, it's fun. It's cute. Like, yeah, I had a good time.
It's the nicest threat I've had all week.
All right. So, spoilers? Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Let's do it.
Okay,
guys,
I super hate.
Guys. We're in spoilers. So the second I, like, while the credits were still rolling, I whipped out my phone and I texted Christy in all caps, oh my god, they turned Colin Farrell into Johnny Depp with, like, 18, like, angry face emojis.
All the angry
I was
emojis.
So pissed.
She was the angriest of emojis. Yeah, and it was funny because I had seen it, like, 2 days before and I was like, Angie, once you see this, we need to talk. Because in my screening, when they're like, Scooby-Doo alert, pull the face off and it's actually Johnny Depp, everybody in the theater, you could hear people go, ugh.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't say that was my audible reaction. And I was a little surprised where, I mean, you guys know the Johnny Depp thing where he dresses up and it's like you could see Johnny Depp's face like oozing out of like all that makeup. But yeah. Here, I was glad that he didn't look so much like Johnny Depp to me. However, that
he
does not
crazy pants. It's the
that does not excuse
look.
The fact that you set up a great villain and you have an actor like Colin Farrell giving a great performance, and then like what did it mean at the end? It's like it just that whole reveal kind of just drove that character into the ground and made the villainous plot that he was doing the entire movie feel right. A little weird and pointless.
It's also bonkers because like someone pointed out on Vulture, like they wrote a post about like, so this guy is supposed to be like the next big deal and he's like wasting his time solving small crimes in New York, which I do disagree that there's apparently some sort of prophecy or something because he's clearly looking for the Ezra Miller thing, mm-hmm. That whole thing. But it's still stupid. And it made me angry because Colin Farrell's so good in this. Like he's interesting and kind of schmarmy and kind of weirdly sexy. And I bought all of that. And then all of a sudden they're like, it's Grindelwald. And I was just like, I hate this. This is dumb. The look is dumb. The two different color eyes and the horrible facial. I'm sorry. I just can't. I'm so mad at the look.
I would also like to point out that the Grindelwald reveal is something that I don't think has quite as much impact as they thought it was going to, because Grindelwald is a super minor character from Harry Potter. Okay. He's a guy that you don't hear about, that you don't even know exists until like very, very late in the series. And then he has a very, very, very minor, like he factors in a very small way to everything that happens in Harry Potter. And they do kind of set up in the beginning of this, like, oh guys, he's kind of like another wizard Hitler. But yeah. then, like, you don't really, like, and they, like, mention him a few times, that you're like, okay, whatever, whatever. And then it's, like, at the end, it's like, and he's Grindelwald! And you're like, oh, okay, this is, like, the time John Harrison turned out to be Khan, I guess, or something. I don't know.
Right.
So the reveal here is making me think a lot about the first Harry Potter movie, and the problem with the whole Grindelwald thing is that it has no stakes for the main character whatsoever. As yes, presented exactly. in the movie, he has no, Newt has no connection with Grindelwald, whereas the beginning of Harry Potter presents Voldemort as... he whom, yeah. whatever it is, that killed his parents. And that's why, as he's brought up throughout the movie, it meant something. And also, it wasn't like Voldemort had taken over what was presented as the main villain in the first film, even. It, you remember the reveal where, like, oh shit, he was like a host and he's chilling in the back of his head. That was creepy and messed up, and it still made both characters matter.
Right.
This, on the other hand... kind of erased what you had been invested in for an entire movie. It was not a good way point. To do it.
There's one other thing I just want to tack on. One other thing that bothered me in the spoiler section is that most of the movie I really liked him and Tina, like Newt and Tina's like kind of good cop, goof cop dynamic. But then at the end, all of a sudden they're like, oh, by the way, we're in love with each other. And I was like, no. No, at no point did I get the feel that there was a romantic vibe there until at one point, all of a sudden, her sister's like, so did you have a girlfriend before? What's the deal? And I was like, come on. Like, that bugged me because it just feels so like, it feels like they felt like they had to make them fall in love and not like it makes any sense for the characters.
It's unnecessary and unearned, especially because the movie already has a really cute, really nice, mm-hmm. really fun romantic subplot involving Jacob and Queenie. I mean, like for me, that was enough romance. Like, and that kind of really fit where the characters had really good chemistry and you could kind of see why they were drawn to each other. But the Newton Tina thing, I agree, it just kind of seemed like, you know, they got along, but it didn't like sense any sparks until like the character started telegraphing it just like through dialogue and stuff, like, oh yeah, girlfriend.
I agree, it was telegraphed, but at the same time I was kind of buying into it throughout the whole movie, because at the beginning she's so much about, you know, I want my position back, I'm gonna take you down in order to do it. And I thought that Catherine Waterston gave kind of like a nuanced performance where I could see her becoming a little more fascinated. And when she goes down into the case, you can kind of see things switch and her fighting for Newt all of a sudden. I was kind of buying it, but I will agree that towards the end and when lines like that were dropped, it felt a little heavy-handed. My favorite part of this entire movie, though, was the whole Queenie-Jacob romance. When he was going to walk out into the rain, I was on the edge of my seat, on the verge of yelling, like, don't do it! I honestly couldn't believe how just, like, riled up I got with that stuff. And at the end, when he's got his bakery and she comes in, and what does it mean? It's like Inception and I can't handle it.
It's like Inception and I hate it. Poster quote.
I think we're supposed to think the fact that she kissed him when he was in the rain gave him, like, maybe not a clear memory, but like an impression of it, because then you see all his like things and he created all these beautiful baked goods that look like the creatures.
I don't think I read it into it as like her kiss was supposed to somehow protect him. I thought it was more just that, like, you know, it's like it erases your memory, but maybe it's kind of still lurking in your subconscious, the way that when you have a dream, you don't quite remember the details, right, but you remember, but like the way might it felt. Or something, yeah. And then, like, seeing her in, like, come in. I don't think he quite remembers who she is, but there's probably, he just kind of knows that, like, he's like, something about her seems, like, familiar, and, like, I'm drawn to her somehow.
I love the idea of just the two of them baking together. Like, in the sequel, whatever happens, I just want one scene of them baking together.
Well, this is the only thing that has me a little nervous moving forward. And I don't know the source material, so I don't know what their backstories are and who ends up with who and all that nonsense. There isn't any. Okay, so my only concern with four films moving forward is the latest rumor I heard is that, you know, I don't even know if it's a rumor, it might have come with someone officially involved in the film, is that the next film is going to take place in a different country. My biggest Paris. Fear is that after becoming, like, such a big fan of the foursome together, that we're going to follow Newt, meeting new characters, and that the main, I'm not saying that Tina, Queenie, and Jacob are going to be out of the picture completely, but I don't want a movie where he makes other friends and they just pop up. I want a movie where the four of them go on adventures together.
Sure. I think they will, because I feel like they spent so much time setting up these characters. I don't think they're going to ditch them. I think that this is the new Ron, Hermione, and
I certainly
Harry. Harry was the one I couldn't remember. And, you know, that other kid, the one with the glasses.
My guess is that it's going to be kind of like how, like, characters like Luna, Neville, and Ginny, like, come more to the forefront as the series goes on. Like, I think that he's going to make new friends because there's no point in moving this to a whole new city only to have no new characters. True. But, I mean, I can't imagine that they have spent all this time on these three other characters and then don't plan to bring them back. My question is kind of
Jacob better have a bakery empire across the entire globe by the end of this series or I won't be satisfied.
Yes, please.
Well, you're also seeing audiences have such a strong reaction to, I think, Jacob in particular. Like, everybody I know was like, Kowalski forever. So I feel like they're gonna know that going forward and being like, we got to keep Kowalski in the mix because people, he's so fun because Newt is not rattled by any of the weird shit that Newt does. And Kowalski is freaked out but amazed by all of it. And so that's really wonderful because it gives us an outlet to be like, right? What is happening with this mating dance? Like, I love all of that.
All right, we should wrap up.
All right, another round of thumbs up for Fantastic Beasts. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'd see Sea Edge of 17 first. It needs your monies more, and I think it's funnier, but Fantastic Beasts is a really fun family film.
That's actually a good thing to point out, is that Edge of 17 will likely not be in theaters as long as Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So if you want to see both and you're a little more excited for Fantastic Beasts, seriously, do Edge of 17 a favor because it deserves it and should be in theaters longer, and go see that now.
Also, if you don't like Johnny Depp, then Edge of 17 has no Johnny Depp.
That's right. No Johnny Depp guarantee on Edge of 17.
Yes. All right. So I think that's a wrap.
All right. So there you have it. Two positively reviewed movies this week. And we're all kind of in agreement. Wow. That's a first in a little while. All right. With that is a wrap on episode 140 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You guys know what to do. Head on over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We also would love if you like us on Facebook as well. All three of us are all over the internet too. Angie, do you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. I just wrote a piece recently about why diversity in film is more important now than ever, and I would love if you guys would read it, because I'm very proud of it.
I would also love if you read it. It's really good. I'm going to throw that out.
You read it, because I feel bad not saying that, and I need to read it now. I'm going to go read it. Good plug, Angie. All right, Christy, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KRISUYPUCHKO. I'm writing all over the web, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com, including a bunch of interviews I did for Fantastic Beasts. And I'm on a radio show called It's Eric Nagel. Look for us at SiriusXM On Demand. You can also subscribe to that on iTunes, and please do that, because right now we're trying to figure out where the show's going to go back into the Sirius lineup, and your demand helps us.
And you guys can find me on my computer reading Angie's work, and also on Twitter and Instagram, at PNMRuff, on the Collider Videos YouTube channel, and I write for Collider.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
You prefer strudel, huh, honey? Strudel it is.